This is what I can do when I'm stressed. This is what I can do when I'm tired. This is what I can do to come back to happiness when I am sad.
Welcome to The Lisa Show, where we take a good look at life. Hey, it's Lisa. Do you remember the good old days of Sesame Street and those videos about how bottled milk and Crayola crayons are made? I loved those. I can still sing the milk song. And do you remember America's favorite game show host, Guy Smiley from Sesame Street? He hosted classic bits like This Is Your Lunch and Name That Sound. He was the ultimate hype guy, and it's probably just because of his name. But in my memory, he always had a ridiculously huge grin on his face, regardless of the situation. So imagine my surprise when I recently saw a clip of him on social media and realized that not only is he not smiling, you know, the limitations of making Muppet mouths, I guess, but he doesn't really look happy at all. The best I can say for him is he looks caffeinated. And I guess that's a form of happiness. But if even Guy Smiley isn't happy, then what chances do we have at being happy? In all seriousness, though, happiness is a real concern, and it can feel elusive, especially since COVID, when it became one of the most frequent searches on the internet. We've touched on this topic in previous seasons on The Lisa Show, but I wanted to bring in my friend, Michelle McCullough, to the studio to add her expertise to the conversation. Michelle's going to tell us about her research on happiness, what she's learned from that research, and how we can live happier, more joyful lives. Here's Michelle.
I'm a happiness researcher, and that gets people interested, like, oh, what does that look like and what are you doing? I mean, I speak, I do leadership development, I help leaders bring emotional intelligence into the workplace. So there's some different ways that I talk about it, but really I'm leading with happiness researcher these days, and that brings some really fun conversations.
Oh, I love that. I bet it does. And I hope that one of those fun conversations happens right now.
It will.
I think it will. From the intro in your book, it says there are a number of people, including myself at times, who still feel completely unsuccessful, overscheduled, tired, and unhappy. I don't know if any of that resonates with you, but I think on a certain level, we all feel that there is something else we could be doing, or worse, we feel we are missing something valuable. Is this what led you to research happiness?
Okay, so I love this conversation, and I love that you pulled that part out of the book. So what's interesting is I actually started being a productivity speaker and a productivity researcher and a productivity author because I got my first Franklin Day Planner when I was 12 years old.
Oh, like, yeah, we've bonded over this.
Very nerdy, right? But then when I became an adult, I started to figure out that productivity only works if your brain is mentally well. And so I would come into these organizations and talk about productivity, and the leaders would then say, I didn't really move the needle. And when we dove deeper into the conversation, it was really that you've got people who are stressed, tired, overworked, and they can't even think about productivity because they've got a million other things going on in their brains, and they're trying to decide and decipher, okay, how am I surviving? Like, survival is the first, and then productivity is second. So
I
went in to do is say, what if we talked about happiness and emotional intelligence first? And then we talked about productivity. And it provided a foundation for people who, if they didn't have tools or weren't trained or didn't have the opportunity to understand, this is what I can do when I'm stressed. This is what I can do when I'm tired. This is what I can do to come back to happiness when I am sad. And it's not about being happy all the time, because emotional intelligence really is the ability to be able to shift when you need to.
Yes.
And so for all of us, myself, like I said, myself included at times when I feel like, what am I even doing? But it comes back to key principles and saying, are you mentally, emotionally well first? Do you have the tools that you need to shift that before we can talk about anything else?
Okay, so take me to the moment where you realized that for yourself personally.
Oh, goodness. There's two quick stories I will tell. I was raised by an eternal optimist, and she had happiness quotes all over our house. She wore happiness symbols around her neck. And every time we had a challenge, she was like, what's the silver lining or what's the good thing? And honestly, I'm so grateful for that foundation. And yet when I became an adult and was out on my own, I was like, has she been lying to me for 15 years?
Hold the phone. Life is not a bowl of candy and sunshine and rainbows, you know?
Right? Yeah. And so I had to figure out some of my own tools, like what works for me. And I think that's an interesting part of this. I think there's some research that we have done and some ways that we have found that actually work for most people. And yet for each of us, there are different parts that makes us happy. And we have to honor that, find that, and fine tune that. And so once I figured out that it was really about me figuring that out for myself. One of the things that I say is that we can talk about being an optimist, but honestly, I don't think being an optimist is enough. I think you have to be what I call the happiest, and the happiest doesn't just look on the bright side, they live there.
Oh, I love that. I think that that's an important distinction, because
right?
I would think, oh, just being an optimist will help you in any situation. But you have to live there.
Yes. Being a happiest is living in that place that says, I can live in the and. These things are hard and I can still be happy. This is really tricky and challenging, and honoring that without putting rose-colored glasses on and saying everything's fine, because everything's not fine and it's terrible and tragic. But there is joy to still be had. There are ways we can still find happiness. And I think the world tries to tell us that we should just be mad all the time.
Why do you say that?
I don't want to divide audiences, but even politically, you think that people are like, well, you're wrong. And if you believe what you believe, you're wrong. And everyone's telling you that you're wrong. And if you watch the news, if you're not outraged by whatever's happening, then you're wrong. Like, you should be outraged.
And in a 24-hour news cycle, then that would mean that you would be outraged all
24/7,
the time.
Right?
And I do feel that pressure, to 100%. Be honest. Okay, mm-hmm. So I'd love to know what research underpins Happiest, or that World Happiness Report.
Okay, thank you for asking about that, because I go to all these organizations and what they say to me all the time is happiness is a soft skill. Like, we can't afford that. We need to pay for the heavy-hitting skills.
What are the heavy-hitting skills?
Like, so they'll say sales, product understanding and management, but happiness—
Cha-ching.
Even success principles. But I have been saying forever that happy employees are more productive, they're more engaged, and they're better team players. But nobody believes me, and so I went and got that research to prove it. And because I'm not a therapist or a doctor, I worked with a group of PhDs that really understood what we were talking about. They also were very scientific. They separated everything by generation and gender. And we did a study on working Americans, because most of us spend our time working. And I wanted to see what the difference was for those who are going and punching a clock, whether it's full or part-time. And so we looked at lots of different factors. But what we found is that 90% of working Americans believe that if they had more happiness and more resilience, not only would they be more productive, better team players, more innovative, better leaders, but they performed better in every workplace situation that we tested.
Every workplace situation.
We tested 25 workplace situations. Conflict, problem solving, ability to be able to come up with something new. And so all of those different types of workplace situations, they agreed that if they were happier, they would do it better. And so then we can have real conversations about the cultures that companies are creating, mm-hmm. but then also have individual conversations that say, this is what might help you, or this is what might help you have a better mind to deal with what's in front of you.
Okay, this is so fascinating. And I'm wondering how this applies to us individually, personally, you know, versus a corporation. Because, you know, the business that we may work with, the company we may work with, may or may not be interested. But how could we apply this in our own personal lives?
One of the statistics in the research that I thought was really interesting is, we asked people, do you want to be happier than you are? But then later in the study, we also asked them, do you deserve to be happier than you are? And 87% of working Americans said they deserve to be happier than they currently are, even if they were some of the happiest people in the study. And that word deserve is so fascinating.
It is. I was just having a conversation with a friend about the word deserve and why it makes me uncomfortable.
Right. It makes me uncomfortable too. But what I loved about that was they are also acknowledging that they put their happiness outside of themselves, because if the next question that we asked is, what would it take for you to be happier? And that's the only open-ended question that we asked, but we have thousands of responses, things like, I wish somebody just hadn't passed away. I wasn't caring for aging parents. I wish I had more money. I wish I had all these things. And really, those are all external factors. And what the research shows, and what I have known forever, is that it actually doesn't matter what your personal circumstances are. For every person I can find that is struggling paying their their bills, I can find another one who's struggling paying their bills that is immensely happy. And the reality in some cases is not just, like I used to say happiness is a choice, and I don't feel like that's necessarily the case for all Americans, because we have people who struggle with anxiety and depression and even other things like OCD or autism that makes it really tricky for them to really manage their emotions. But what I will say is that happiness may not be a choice, but there are habits that you can put in place that will help you to be happier. And so I tried them on myself. I've given them to lots of individuals. I've given them to lots of organizations. And what it is that happiness is not the destination, it's the practice. It's what are you doing every day? What are you doing every week that regardless of the circumstances that you're faced with, that you can have the kind of happiness that you feel like you deserve?
Oh, tell me all these habits. And maybe this is the recovering perfectionist, give me a to-do list to check off so I can get a nice little buzz off of it.
Sure.
Get me a list.
Well, the greatest part is that I tell everyone to make their own. So make your own joy list of what makes you happy. And for me, because of my productivity background, I systemized it in a way that I said—
Of course you did.
Yeah, because that's all I can do. My
brain that sounds
can only work
by
one
way.
And so I have my daily, weekly, and monthly task list that I do at home, that I do in my business. And yes, sometimes it doesn't happen, and that's human and normal. I'm human and normal.
Congratulations.
But, thank you. I do the same thing with my happiness. So what are the things that will help me every day to be happy? What are the things that help me every week to be happy? What are the things that help me every month? And so I have things like I have happy playlists that I'll play. I have routines. I also did something in the last 12 months where I looked at my screen time, and my screen time was absolutely through the roof. Now, I work online, generally speaking, but I looked at that and said, there's got to be a better way. And I made two decisions that not only changed my screen time, but changed my mental health. And the first one was take a physical book with me everywhere I go. So I have a physical book everywhere I go, that if I'm sitting at the doctor's office or waiting in carpool or I get waylaid somewhere else, I do not pick up my phone and scroll. I read a book. And it's really hard because the pull is there and there's so many things. And I think I could email, I could catch up, I could text people. But reading a physical book not only has been good for that, but it's really good for your brain. It's good for your brain to take a deep breath and to just take a breather away from technology. And then the other thing that I do every day is movement. And I stopped calling it exercise because exercise, the word itself, made me crazy. And if you love the word exercise, please use it. But for me, it was movement. And so even if I couldn't get a full workout in, I would go for a 20-minute walk. And the movement for me and that commitment actually really helps my mental health. But there's lots of other things. And one of my monthlies is I go to a Tuesday movie in the middle of the day once a month. And I block it off.
I think that would make me happy.
It's so great. They're cheaper, Lisa.
Yeah.
But it's so fun. There's no one there. I go at 11 a.m. And if somebody calls me and says, are you available? I say, I'm sorry, I'm not, but I could talk to you on Wednesday. And I honor that time for myself because happiness is an intentional decision. And it's the ways that we choose to bring it into our lives. And for you, it might not be a movie, which is why you have to create your own.
I was going to say, because there's part of me, especially like with the podcast, that's like, give me a list. What's on your list? Your daily, your weekly, your monthly. But I see what you're doing now. Like it is going to be individualized. So how did you create this list? Or are there certain like prompts that you can ask yourself if somebody's having a hard time coming up with their own?
I will ask a couple of questions because it's true. One of the things that I have found through trial and error is that I started doing things that other people told me I should do, which is really easy on social media because you're scrolling and there's all these cool people that have fancy lives that are saying you should have a massage every week or you should take a bath every day or you should do all these things, whatever that should is. And so you're like, oh, I need to be doing what they're doing because they have a great life. And the reality is it works for them. So what works for you? And knowing that the number one thing that I will say before I ask the question is, you have to believe that there are things that work for you, that each human on this planet has tools, strategies, ideas that work. Music works for most people, but it doesn't work for everyone. But what else does work for you? Mm. And some people like to create music or play music, but don't like to listen to music. And so you use some of your own things. The first thing I'll say is kind of go back. And I'm not like go back to your 7-year-old self because that's a little bit different, but what used to work? Because for most of us, we used to do things regularly that made us happy. Little things like going to get ice cream once a week. And as silly as that sounds, you love to go get ice cream, why did you stop? Because somebody told you that ice cream was bad for you? Well, that's tragic. It might be bad for you, but if it makes you happy, then you figure out how to do it in a way that makes you happy. You might choose frozen yogurt. You might do it less frequently. But outings for me are one of mine. And I tried to figure out how can I still do that without breaking the bank and without being somebody who is getting ice cream every day? Because wouldn't that be really great? Ice cream every day.
Wouldn't it?
Right?
My stomach would be like, hey, now.
Yeah, I'm not sure. That's a great idea.
We're not happy, mm-hmm. but you are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but your soul is.
Right? But you have to figure some of those things out. And so there's some different categories that you can also look at too. Experiences, like what are you experiencing that brings you joy? Food is actually one of its own categories because different people are happy. And I have a personal trainer who loves almonds and eats a bag of almonds every day, and that brings her joy. It made me cry when she told me that. But for her, if that's what brings you true joy and you're doing it because you like it, then do it.
Yeah, don't yuck someone's yum.
Mm-hmm. The other one is friends and family. So what are routines that you have around friends and family? Because connection really is a big part of the happiness toolkit. And that can look different. And even like you and I were talking before this about how things are different since 2020 and how we connect is different too. But really, the study is showing that people need connection with friends and family more than ever. And our bodies were actually meant to connect. If we weren't, then we would all have been sent to individual desert islands to figure out life. But instead, we were sent with humans and neighbors and friends and ways to connect. So we need to do that too. And then the other one is some type of creativity. What can you do? Even if you don't feel like you're a creative person, can you paint by numbers? Can you create something? Can you knit? But something that gives you an option for creativity.
At one point in my life, I remember thinking, and this was helpful to me on this quest for happiness when it felt hard, at a time when usually my disposition is pretty optimistic and it mm-hmm. wasn't hard. So I was like learning this new skill as like a middle-aged woman. And I was thinking, I have all of the tools necessary to be happy right now. I have all of the elements in life, all of the things to be happy right now. And just acknowledging that was really super helpful to me.
And more people need to have that. And the challenge is that we actually teach kids from a very young age, you'll be happy when, without saying those exact words, like, won't you be so excited if you can go to your friend's house later? And won't be so great when you get to go to school with your friends? And won't it be so great when you get your license or you get to go on a date or you get to graduate from high school or get into the college that you want or the job of your dreams? Like, we talk about happiness and success as if it's the end of something rather than teaching people, what made you happy today? Or how did you choose to find and intentionally create joy? Like, what is it that you did to create happiness today? And that will change everything because I think you're right. The research is clear. It doesn't matter how much money you make. It doesn't matter what your job title is. It doesn't matter where you live. What matters most is your belief and ability to choose happiness. And we're so good at looking at social media or even our neighbors and saying, oh, well, I wish I had a life like them mm-hmm. or I wish I was doing
the things
that
they— I'd be happy if I did.
Yes.
Which is a dangerous way to
Very
think.
Very dangerous. Words, and we actually say those to ourselves regularly. I'd be happy if.
Yeah.
And those are some of the most damaging words you can say. And so if you notice yourself saying that, you have to force yourself to say, what if I were happy right now? What would that look like? Instead of waiting for happiness at the end of something, choosing to find ways to feel happy right this minute.
I love
happy.
This. And this really reinforces the idea that really sparked this whole conversation, or me wanting to have this conversation with you, is that you were talking about how happiness isn't a mood, it's a skill.
Yes.
What do you wish more people understood?
What I wish more people understood is that across all generations, across all age groups, across male and female and all job titles, the number one way that people said that they can improve their happiness is positivity. Like choosing to look at something from the bright side. And that is something that anyone can do. You may not feel naturally happy, and your brain over the course of time might naturally have a negative news ticker, but that's actually one thing you can change. Like you can notice yourself going, oh my gosh, everything is so hard, I hate this. And then go, oh, I just did that. But what would a positive person say? What could I say? And then you know what to say. You can say, oh yes, this is hard, and. It goes back to the and conversation. But the other thing that I think is important as part of the positivity is becoming aware. Like it's so easy to get caught in all of the different things that are being said, all of the negative conversations that are around, the ways that people are complaining. And that complaint can be an easy part of our negative and the ways that our brain just naturally flows that direction. But if you can train yourself to be more positive, not only does it start to rewire itself over time and you'll start to be more positive naturally, but it can change your mood almost instantaneously. So looking at it and acknowledging it and saying, oh, that's a negative comment. What would it be if it were positive? Or how could I look at this another way? The belief part is really important. I think I should also share with you one other piece of research that I didn't do, but I've watched. So there's a man by the name of Martin Seligman, and he is the foremost researcher on post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm-hmm. And he's the one who was brought into the United States Army to say, how do we help all of these people who come back from deployment and they are broken? And so as a psychologist himself, he thought access to mental health counseling would help, or access to medicine or resources, or helping them have a support system would help them. He went through all of these different pieces and over years was like, why are some people okay and some people aren't?
Yeah.
Or why do some people heal and some people don't? So they tried to do some preventative measures before people were deployed, gave them some skills and training, which was helpful. But at the end of the day, after years of research, what he said is the number one factor that determines whether someone will be healed from post-traumatic stress disorder or not is the belief that they will.
Oh.
That's the only difference.
Just if you can get them to believe that it's possible.
If you can get them to believe that it's possible. And so now they focus on telling people, you might come back and have issues, but you can heal. And they tell the success stories of the people who have healed. And they show the individuals who have said, yes, it was really hard, but I kept using my tools. I kept going to therapy because it's the ones who stop going to therapy, the ones who isolate from friends and family. They get worse and worse and worse because they just believe, I have PTSD and I'll have it forever. And a lot of us have traumatic experiences, but I think that along that positivity line, if you can believe that you can be happier, and if you can believe that you can have the tools and access to the tools, you will. And that's the only difference. So that positivity piece,
wow,
even if it's not natural for you, believe that it is, and that's what you can work on.
It really is a skill.
Mm-hmm.
You have to practice. Some people are naturally inclined at it, or they have their positive mother's voices in their heads, like
right,
you and me. And so it feels a little bit more comfortable. But even if you don't, you can start it. When someone then feels stuck, sort of emotionally or stuck and even has that belief, then what sort of practice mm-hmm will help with that skill?
Okay, so there are two things I recommend. The number one is this usually happens around a challenge. Like they're in a personal life challenge. It could be a challenge that's lasting for a long time. It could be a challenge that—
And it could be a series of challenges where you just feel like, oh my gosh, like again, like
punching
forget
bag
it
challenge,
yes,
right? Where you're getting it hit left and right. Challenges with your kids, challenges with your parents, challenges at work, all of that happening at once and you feel incredibly stretched. The first one is, and I recommend this for everyone, is I want you to set a timer for 1 minute. It doesn't have to take a long time. Write down everything that you're learning from this experience. What are you learning? What are you experiencing? Like if you had to tell yourself, what have I done? And then I'll give them some prompts. I'll say things like, how have you become kinder to other people?
You're good.
Where has your empathy increased because of this experience? Where have you looked around and gone, oh my gosh, when that person told me they had that challenge and I was like, buck up, camper, and then I wasn't, now I know what that really feels like.
Wow.
And so sometimes they can do this a little bit easier and sometimes we have to say, okay, put your current challenges aside, choose something else from your past because it's a lot easier to look at your past and say, oh, well, my parents got divorced when I was 7. And now with the 30 years, 40 years, oh my gosh, how old I am, experience there is, what have I learned from that experience?
Right.
And now I can list all of those things. But really, if we can just look at the learning piece first, that will help us. Mm-hmm. But then the second part is if this is your life, you cannot say, I'm going to wait until this is done in order for me to be happy. And you cannot say, I'm going to wait until this is done in order for me to put practices in place that help me to be happier.
Okay.
And so you're the person who's going to sit down and say, okay, here's my week, and I know it's going to be crazy. What can I do?
Mm-hmm.
Because we get really stuck in the question, oh, I can't do this because, or I can't do this because.
Because it's not our first choice.
No, it's not. And it's a lot easier to go, oh, I'll deal with that later.
Like it absolutely is.
We put the happiness on the back burner. We're like, I'm in the middle of this, and it's hard. And we can't do that.
We want to like act as if, in the best case scenario, if this happened, I like to say it's like plan A, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like in the metaverse, our true lives where everything goes great. And it's just like, that's not how life is. But our expectations seem to be clashing. This combats it. it's that internal voice asking ourselves better questions is really a skill. And that inner voice is very important.
It's
so vital.
And the good news is, not my study, but the research is on your side, because the most trusting voice in your head is actually yours. They've done studies of people who hear positive thoughts mm-hmm. from other people's voices.
Yeah.
But then when they read them themselves and listen to them back, they trust their own voice the most. Which means that you cannot be saying negative things, even if you feel like, well, this is my reality or this is true. It's like, well, and what's the other side of that? What is the positive side of that? Because your own voice is the most believable voice. So speak it out and say it out loud.
What challenges do you have knowing this research and living?
Sorry. Mm-hmm. It's true.
Because this is such a good conversation for me mm-hmm. because I genuinely think that I'm a happy person.
Yeah, me too.
Despite a lot of reasons that people tell me I shouldn't be. But at the same time, I've gathered a lot of things. I know what my personal challenges are. I could work on that inner voice a little bit. She's real sarcastic.
Oh, and she's good.
She's really funny, but she's biting mm-hmm. and she could be a little nicer. I just wonder, because it must feel like a lot of pressure having researched this to actually know what works and what doesn't. And then the practice in it and practicing any skill is hard.
Mm-hmm.
So
it
which
is.
Part is hard for you?
So the research was finished in 2024. We completed the United States Happiness Report at the end of 2024. And I will go down in record to say that 2025 has been one of my hardest years ever.
Oh.
And I didn't plan that. But I'm sure God was like, whoa, let's see.
Now you have all the skills.
Let's use your tools.
And, oh, I'm so sorry.
But you know what? That's life, right? And there's lots of people listening who are watching who are probably saying, yeah, 2025, dumpster fire. And sometimes I can say, I thought 2024 was a dumpster fire, or 2023 mm-hmm. or 2022. And for some people, the challenges that they're currently facing, they really are big. But here's what I will say. I will absolutely go down and say that 2025 is a year that I cried probably the most of all of the years ever.
Oh, I'm
and
sorry.
I will also say that I trusted this and I put this to work, and I have had so much joy. I have had so much joy. And it's weird that they are at the same time, but I truly believe you can have sunshine in the middle of the darkest places. And I had to trust and believe myself. I had to trust and believe the research. And I had to be so committed to the things that bring me joy. And I did them. And even when it was really hard and people were like, why can you still do that? I'm like, I can't not do it. I can't not do it, because I know that it makes a difference. And I also know that the perfect human world is actually not feeling happy all the time. That would be too easy. The perfect human world is looking at a situation and being able to say, what do I want to feel? How do I want to feel this? And it's okay. Sometimes I give myself an opportunity and I'll say, okay, you can feel really mad about this for 5 minutes. What do you want to say? Say it all. I yell it. I scream it. I cry it. Whatever it is, I allow myself to feel that. And then it gives me permission that feelings are okay, right? It's fine to feel grief.
And they come and go.
They do. They absolutely do. And so it's okay to feel those emotions. I love the quote by Winston Churchill that says, if you're going through hell, keep going. And don't stop there. My friend Tiffany's mom used to say, if you're going through hell, don't stop and build a house there.
Oh.
And I love that reminder that sometimes we want to feel angry, we want to feel mad, we want to feel grief, and we deserve to feel all of those things. And it's also okay for it to take some time. When you have big challenges, that doesn't mean it's a snap can move you back into happiness. But I also think if you're in the middle of a big challenge, that doesn't mean that you can't find ways to be happy. And so even if it's as simple as watching a TV show that makes you laugh, or chatting with a friend, or texting a friend and saying, okay, I need three of your best memes right now. Hurry fast. You've
got
1 minute. I only have a minute until I spiral. But it's knowing what works and who you can reach out to. And also, I am grateful for great counselors and coaches that can help you work through things when there's a problem.
That's so great. I wonder if we can end with maybe a success story of somebody that you've known, that you've worked with, that didn't think it was possible and was able to implement these kinds of skills on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of to give people hope.
I love it. I worked with a woman who was a vice president of a large organization,
mm-hmm.
and she loved what she did. She loved the company. She loved her boss, but was working like 80-hour weeks. And she needed to work to provide for her family. There were some situations happening with her husband, but she was so burnt out and so tapped that she was like, I don't even know why I'm calling you. I don't know why we're doing executive coaching for people who are crazy. And why? Because she's like, there's no space. There's no space for the daily, weekly, monthly. And
was
so,
this me?
No.
Okay. Just checking. Go
but
on.
Maybe there are others. And I think the same
thing.
No,
it's just
said,
very relatable.
It's so
this
relatable.
Is a great story.
And stay at
so
home
relatable.
Moms mm-hmm. who are doing it all the time.
You're like, when?
At when are you going to do this? And so what I said to her is, if you could do anything, what would you do? And she said, I would make stained glass. And she picked the thing that, of course, takes a million hours to
no,
do.
Seriously.
And not just something like, oh, could I knit it?
Super
could I
respect
crochet
it.
A, yeah. a pot holder, right? But she picked something and she said, I've always wanted to take a stained glass class and I've always wanted to make stained glass. And she's like, I even have a box of tools and they're just in the corner. And I said, okay, here's your job between now and next time. I need you to find a place in your home and take all of your tools out. Even if you don't make anything this week, your job this week is to find a place. It can be a corner of the garage. It can be a corner of your room, but get the box out and get everything out. And when I saw her the next week and chatted with her, she was like, honestly, it took me until right before this call to get it done because I had to be accountable to you. And she said, but I've looked forward to this all week. I've looked forward to taking tools out of a box all week. And what I loved about that was it doesn't have to be big things. You don't have to sign up for the stained glass class tomorrow. You don't have to be crazy at piano. Go buy a piano book. Like whatever it is. And it's not just about hobbies and interests, but what is something that you can do? A step. Again, the best question is, what can I do? And take a step forward and trust that you can take another one, another one. The biggest trap that we have is believing that we can't. And we all can. We can do something. And when you start to believe that, that's when hope comes in and things can shift and change. And of course, she started doing some stained glass and she still has challenges and changed her job, finally figuring out that she could. It's a little thing. Take one action.
Happiness isn't as elusive as we may think. It's not what happens when hard things end. It's what can get us through the hard things. Happiness will look different for all of us, but the skills to get us there are the same, including believing happiness is possible, looking at our circumstances with more positivity, reflecting on how we are growing through our challenges, speaking more hopefully out loud so we can hear our own voices, and planning non-negotiable daily, weekly, and monthly moments of joy. Whether that's a midday movie or catchy playlist or making stained glass or watching videos of Muppets and crayon making on repeat.
The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio, hosted by Lisa Valentine Clark. This episode was produced by Erica Price with help from Becca Hurley-Lung, Blake Morse, and Kenny Mears, with post-production by Gracie Davis. A special thanks to today's guest, happiness expert Michelle McCullough. A link to her website will be in the show notes. Don't miss out on two other great podcasts from the Lisa Show family, The Council of Moms and Proofread, a new book review podcast to help you read more of what you love. You can find The Council of Moms and Proofread on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for your messages. We read them all. And thanks for listening.
Are you looking to build better connections or bridge divides but struggle with the how? There's another podcast I think you'll love. It's called Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. It's an audio and video podcast brought to you by the BYU Radio family. Now, on Uncomfy, you'll hear stories of real people in moments that really challenge their perspective. And instead of getting angry or shutting down, they stuck with their discomfort. Whether it's getting some tough feedback from a close friend or choosing to hear out a politically opposed colleague, they chose to stay open and curious, and they're glad they did. It's very empowering. New episodes of Uncomfy drop every Wednesday. You can listen or watch on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.